This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
Happy Christmas Eve, Straight Fire fans. What is up? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire for Friday, December 24th. It's Christmas Eve. Hope y'all are staying in. You don't have any last minute shopping to do. Maybe you caught me on the Dan Patrick Show this morning. We got a great podcast ahead. I'll be brief because the 49ers game got me sick to my stomach. We'll talk about that. Rob G will do a victory lap over Jimmy Garoppolo, just basically shitting his pants on national television. And we got a great guest, Bernie Fratto, gambler from Vegas, going to talk college football playoff, NFL Week 16. And then I've got some best bets. It's a choppy week with the COVID, so I don't have a ton, but some good teasers and a college football bet you're going to love for the bowl season. But first, we've got to start with the 49ers and the Titans. And, you know, this is the roller coaster ride that is Jimmy Garoppolo. That's the only way to describe it. He was rolling the last few weeks, no turnovers, safe football, came from behind against the Bengals. Well, not from behind, but a nice run there in the fourth quarter when the Bengals pushed them. Steely demeanor of Jimmy G. And he goes into Tennessee. They go up and down the field. Touchdown. Right out of the gate. Get the ball back. Go right down the field. And end zone interception. And it was at that moment that you knew, ah, shit, we're in for a long one. If you can punch that in there, touchdown 14-0, even the field goal 10-0, it starts to feel like the pressure's on. But you throw the pick, and it's like, oh, okay, here we go. Doors ajar. Jimmy G rattled. And then the rest of the half, he just didn't really have it. They go up 10-0. They had a possession that they could do nothing with to try to add to it. And this is when you knew Kyle Shanahan had had it. And this is where, this is it, before it even got really ugly. End of the half, Niners had a buck 20, and I think they had two timeouts. And Kyle Shanahan tries a couple passes and ultimately just decides, we're going to sit on it. And that was the sign where you knew he did not trust his quarterback, and that is scary for the long-term prospects of Jimmy G. I have been a Jimmy G ride-or-die guy. This was not his best performance. But like you can't totally crown him after one game. You can't after he gets a nice 5-6 game stretch. The guy's been to a Super Bowl. He's not Jared Goff, okay? He's not Jared Goff. Jimmy G had a bad game. And in the third quarter, Titans get a field goal. Jimmy G with an unbelievably bad pick in deep in his own end results in a touchdown by the Titans a few plays later, and it's game on. Now, he did ultimately lead the comeback, and they score, but this ultimately, you know, this comes again off as Jimmy G screwed up. And I know Rob G sitting there licking his chops, just waiting to get in his jabs at Jimmy Garoppolo. Debo Samuel, by the way, because I know you guys care, got me. Are you ready for this? 28 fantasy points. He was projected for 14. I'm facing the number one seed. Debo, I mean, that guy is a top 10 receiver in the league. I don't care what anybody says. Unfortunately, A.J. Brown was on the other side of the field, and 49ers secondary got torched. So, Rob, you were laughing at Jimmy G with the rest of America. I don't know, what, 50 million people watching that game? I don't know. What do you want to do? You want to dance on his grave? You want to ship him out of town? You want to Trey Lance?
No, I'm not going to dance on his grave. I mean, he got ripped enough on Twitter. You know, that's the problem with these standalone games is if you do well, everybody crowns you. And if you do poorly, people, you know, jump down your throat. He was bad, but I don't think he was as bad as what social media will tell you. This is, you know, who he is. This wasn't anything different. This wasn't like a bad Jimmy G game. This was a Jimmy G game. There's spots where, you know, when it's wide open and he'll make you pay and he'll start out 8 for 8, like I think he did last night. And then there's spots like how you mentioned in that third quarter where it's the brutal interception or missing a guy wide open, which should have been a touchdown, and just throwing it out of bounds. It's like, that's the Jimmy G experience. And I will say, if I'm a Niners fan, I would actually be more concerned about Trey Lance than Jimmy G at this point, because you know what Jimmy G is. Like, he's a game manager who can kind of do a little bit more here and there, but not consistently. And you see games like last night, and you tell yourself, we traded all of this capital for Trey Lance, and he can't do this? He can't hit the schemed wide-open wide receiver over the middle? He can't throw it in the vicinity of George Kittle and let him make a play? Like, I would feel less excited right now about Trey Lance and I would be down on Jimmy G.
Interesting. Now, it's weird because you mentioned Trey Lance and like I didn't have the broadcast on, so I wasn't listening. But did they mention him once during the broadcast?
I don't recall.
Okay. So, I mean, like, Jimmy G, I thought he cost him the game. I know you're giving him a little bit of a pass. But at the same time, Rob, I do want to point out, this defense, I saw this stat. The Titans are the first team in the NFL this season with 5 conversions in a game of 3rd and 10 or longer. Basically, Tannehill dropped back and was like, oh, where's A.J. Brown? Oh, man coverage. Let me just throw it to him. And like the secondary, you know, you can't really blame them because it's a bunch of backups and guys who are off the street and Josh friggin' Norman, who's, I mean, come on, that guy was great like 7 years ago. So the Niners defense does stink, but at no point did Trey Lance warm up. Like Shanahan has not lost confidence. And I got to jog the memory here, Rob. When Alex Smith was the quarterback in KC, and Patrick Mahomes was like the understudy waiting. At no point were they like, well, maybe they should go to Mahomes. I don't remember that at all, but the Chiefs also didn't get as many primetime games as the 49ers. And then it was like, okay, final week of the season, we'll start Mahomes. And then the playoff game, there was never like a, okay, let's play Mahomes. It was like a done deal that we're riding with Alex Smith. Mahomes is next year. I don't even know that it's for sure. Do you think that's just like, hey, we're just going to do Jimmy G this year and then he's done and we're going to go to Trey Lance next year? Do you think that's the case?
No, because I think that Jimmy G has a lot of Jordan Love in him, where if he was as good as people hoped he is, he'd already be playing.
Wait, Trey Lance or Jimmy G?
Trey Lance. Oh, sorry, I don't know if I said that wrong.
Yeah.
Because Alex Smith, you know, for all of his shortcomings, he was much better than what Jimmy G is. He was very solid. He didn't kill you in games like Jimmy G did last night. Like that interception in the third quarter was brutal. And Alex Smith was not making those kind of plays. Even in that playoff game that they lost, it wasn't necessarily him. It was whatever Marcus Mariota in that second half just went on a tear that nobody saw coming.
That's a fair point. I think it was just that Alex Smith was limited with his arm. And I think he had had some injuries and he just wasn't like as mobile as he used to be. I want to defend Jimmy G, but there's really nothing you can say to defend him. It's like, dude, he had a bad game. What are you going to do? They got the Texans next week. They should win that. And then they finished with the Rams. But it's not even a lock now that they're going to the playoffs, Rob.
No.
I mean, if I think the Vikings win, they're then tied with the Vikings. And if the Eagles win, then they're tied with the Eagles. I do think San Fran beat the Eagles this year. I don't know about the Vikings, but like, it's so weird. We're all week, San Fran's a team you don't want to see in the playoffs. They just faced Tennessee, which Tennessee, by the way, did not look good, Rob. It's basically A.J. Brown and that's it. Their defense didn't even have to do anything on those interceptions. They were just bad throws. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting and I'm just disappointed that I lost some money on the Niners, but I don't know. So what's your gut telling you? Jimmy G, playoffs or no?
Yes, because I think Minnesota's going to fold down the stretch. They're dealing with some COVID issues, which you will get to in the interview with Bernie Fratto. I think that they'll find a way to sneak in. And the Niners' biggest issue, not that they're a bad team, is that the division they play in is brutal. You know, like you don't have an easy, even the Seahawks, who were having a really bad season. It's not like you roll over the Seahawks when you face them. You know, you're still close at least half the game, 3/4 of the game. So that's their issue.
All right, folks. Tough one for the Niners, tough one for the bankroll, but at least Deebo Samuel got us a bunch of fantasy points. All right, without further ado, let's get to our guest, Bernie Fratto.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire. He's been on it before. I knew him from my radio show when I'd bring him in to talk lines, college football, NFL, NBA. He would just toss out NBA bets that were winners. Bernie Fratto, how are you, Bernie?
Hey, Jason, really good to be with you again. Happy holidays. Best to you and your family. And Robert as well.
Yeah, best to you as well. You know, you're in rainy Vegas. I'm in rainy Southern California. Good day to curl up with a nice book. And it just so happens that you've got one out. The View from the Cheap Seats. I mean, when I saw Dick Schaap's name in there, I was like, oh, my. Bernie, that was one of my heroes, Dick Schaap, the sports reporters. Come on. Love that guy.
Dick was my mentor, and wow. I actually had Jeremy on the show, my show, this last Saturday night. But the view from the cheap seats emanates, Jason, from a philosophy I've always had. I've always been a sucker for a good story. I think most of us are. But there's an old saying, tell me the truth, I'll believe it. Share a fact and I'll learn it. But give me a great story and it lives in my heart the rest of my life. And I mentored under Dick Schaap. We were very close friends. As a matter of fact, 2 days ago, the 21st, was the 20th anniversary of his passing. Mm. So I had Jeremy on my show. We talked about it because I've known him for 25 years as well. But Dick told me his favorite sport was people. He didn't root for any teams. He rooted for the story. And the truth is, we agreed that the game results and box scores are important, but it's always the backstories that give the sports depth and texture, because you hear the results of the game, but you really feel the story. And I think you'd agree, Jason, stories really entertain people. They inform, they provoke thought, they arouse emotion, they connect people to each other, and they stoke imagination and they spark curiosity. So the view from the cheap seats, first of all, the title is an homage from my very first radio show that I created back in 1996 at WETK 1050 Ann Arbor in Michigan, which is the still is the flagship for the Michigan Wolverines. And even though I've been credentialed for everything, I've covered Super Bowls, Major League Baseball All-Star Game, the World Series, the NBA Finals, you name it, Rose Bowls, I still am like the little kid watching the game from the cheap seats and never quite have lost that thrill. So the book is a compilation of about 50 stories that most people have never heard throughout the years, featuring famous people like Don Shula all the way to the 1936 Olympic team and everything in between.
Wow. Yeah, definitely been around 96. So you had just missed in Ann Arbor the 5-5, I guess. They were
right.
They were what, like 92?
That was 92 and 93. They got to the finals both years and lost both years.
Oh man, I love those guys. That was awesome. Like that was prime college basketball, right? The '90s. It feels like Duke was stacked. Fab Five Kentucky was good. Yeah, it was awesome. UConn with Calhoun.
Absolutely.
But college basketball is falling on hard times. Would you agree, Bernie? Like I barely paid attention to it this season. COVID's destroying it right now.
Well, I agree with you. Right now, it's overshadowed, of course, by the NFL and such in college football. But you are right, Jason. It's lost a lot of the panache. It's lost a lot of the marquee value. You know, back then you talk about those great teams back in the early 90s. Christian Laettner played all 4 years.
I know.
Right? So how many folks stay all 4 years now? And it's college. You know, I covered the UNLV Running Rebels here for 7 years to do a pre- and post-game show, Rebel Extra. And it even here at UNLV, it became a way station for guys like Chris Wood and Kem Birch to just come to college. But whether they won or not, it didn't really matter. And it was a way station just to get to the NBA.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to root for a guy who stops by for 1 year. And technically, it's not even a year, right, Bernie? It's like he's essentially there for the basketball season. Then it ends. You're not going to class after that. There's really no connection to the players. And then everybody on social media ends up mocking the guys who stay for 4 years. They're like, oh, he's an 8-year senior. It's like, come on, man, that's good. Like, I don't know about you. I was in no rush to leave college. I loved it. Got a fifth year, milked that out of my parents by, you know, I transferred school, so I lost some credits. But I was like, ah. Come on, I got to stay around campus. It was awesome, the fifth year. But all right, Bernie, let's get to, you know, you covered Michigan. I want to ask you, before we get to the NFL, you know, in your book, I'm sure there were some good times covering Michigan football. I would say Jim Harbaugh getting to the playoff is probably their biggest highlight this century. Is that a stretch or no?
No, I think that's fair. Their last Big Ten championship was 2004 under Lloyd Carr. And they did have sort of a de facto national championship in 97. They shared it with Nebraska. That was the Charles Woodson team.
Yeah.
But, yeah, in this century, has not been great for Michigan football. Lloyd Carr was solid, but they ran him out on a rail in 07. That was followed by Rich Rod, then Brady Hoke. And then when Harbaugh came in, let's face it, he got hired in December 2014. He was hired to do three things. Beat Ohio State, which he hadn't done. Win the Big Ten, which he hadn't done, and get to the playoff, which he hadn't done. So they're exercising a lot of demons this year, and they're very happy in Ann Arbor, although I do think they're going to have a real comeuppance against Georgia.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that game. I'm trying to look for a line on it. Is it still 7, 7.5?
7.5.
Yeah, it looks like 7.5.
Depending on where you shop, I've seen eights. I've even seen a couple nines out there, but the consensus line is about 7.5. 79% of the money has come in on Michigan, and it's public money, which, as you well know, Jason, when the public dog is prevalent, it's usually good for the sports books.
Yeah, I said it right after the show, whatever that show was on the Sunday, which was like 8 minutes long, and then, of course, NFL just steamrolls it, but Georgia has to be the side here. I know you like Michigan, and everybody's like, well, they beat Ohio State, and they crushed Iowa in the the Big Ten championship, and of course, you know, Georgia, geez, they got smoked by Alabama. You got to go Michigan. No. And this is the guy's thinking, like, bet what you just saw, right? And that's right. Why the public's overwhelmingly coming in on Michigan. But I think we're both in agreement on Georgia. But what about that other game? Cincinnati-Alabama, a little tricky. It's come off the 14, which kind of surprised me.
I can't back Cincinnati at 13.5. That's no disrespect whatsoever. Look what Alabama did to Oklahoma and Kyler Murray 2 years ago.
I know.
Look what they did to Notre Dame. I will probably hold my nose and lay the number. I have ultimate respect for Cincinnati, but I just think over four quarters, they're going to see a little bit different. They're stepping way up in class, and you put Nick Saban in games like this, this is where he lives.
Isn't it funny? Like, 48 hours before Georgia-Alabama, it was like, is Alabama going to make the playoff? Can they make it with a loss? Of course, the game happens. Oh, they're the favorites. They should be 2 touchdown favorites over Cincinnati, and now they're going to win the title. I really want to make a case, but you're right, Bernie. I remember stepping, I said, Michigan State, that defense, and run the ball, and Connor Cook, and 28-0. It was just like over at a quarter, you know?
Well, I will tell you, you define the moment or the moment defines you. When Bama was getting 6 points, I said, is this a misprint? I had one of my biggest bets of the year. The last 92 straight games, Saban was a favorite. The last time he was an underdog was coincidentally at Georgia in October 2015, catching 1.5, and then won 38-10. You had a desperate, desperate Alabama team who's very good. Clearly what happened the week before at Auburn, they're human. They were looking ahead. That's what 19, 20-year-olds do. But you're going to see a very, I think, focused, angry, physical Georgia team with a front seven of the likes Michigan has not seen all year. Michigan's stock and trade is to run between the tackles. They're not going to be able to. And they don't have the kind of dynamic wide receivers and quarterback that Alabama had to stretch the field that way. Harbaugh doesn't want to throw the ball. Only wants to throw the ball after he's sucked in the linebackers and the run has opened up passing lanes, right?
Yeah.
Not going to be the same thing. Michigan could hang that number, but I feel like it's Georgia by 10 to 13.
Yeah. I'm in agreement. Let me just put this out there before we get to NFL. The kid Gardner, Sauce Gardner for Cincinnati, best cornerback in the country, hasn't given up a touchdown in his career. And I know he plays in a lesser division. But with Mechie out for Alabama, got injured in the Georgia game, he won't play. That basically leaves the other kid, the superstar receiver, Jameson Williams, I believe.
Yes.
The Ohio State transfer. So he's going up against Gardner. And again, it is Bryce Young in a game where he's had a month off, massive spotlight, and if they're able, Gardner's able to take away Williams, and that's tough to say because Williams is a first-round pick. I just wonder if maybe there's a case to be made for Cincy. But again, going against Nick Saban when he's had a month to prepare for anybody is really idiotic, right?
That, and I think football is a game of attrition, and over the three-hour period, slowly but surely, Bama's depth, Bama's speed, Bama's experience, Bama's physicality. It's going to be a slow burn. It'll just be too much for Cincinnati.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, let's get to the NFL. And Bernie, you're a big Detroit Lions guy. I think when we talked earlier this season, they might have been like 0-5 or headed toward potentially 0-17. They've really turned it around with Campbell in recent weeks. But I will say this, the Falcons are one of my bets this week. Favored by 6. I know that Matt Ryan should not be favored over 6 by anybody. But I saw Goff was on the COVID list. And Swift is practicing, but it's unlikely to play. Hockenson, he's out. And I just wonder if after that victory this past week, a huge blowout of Arizona, you know, Christmas week, do they lose focus? Last time they got a win, Bernie, they went out to Denver, and Denver just ran all over them. I can see Atlanta coming home. Atlanta against the Niners were right there. 3 trips inside the 10 and 0 points because Arthur Smith is doing dumb things against the Niners inside the 10. But this is Detroit. Atlanta has rolled bad teams. Am I dumb here?
No, where did you get the number? Because did you get it at 4.5?
I think I have 5 and then 5.5, but I'm seeing 6 today.
Right,
as we record.
Right. So 5's a dead number. 5. Yeah. When you see the 6, you start to get a little leery. But let's unpeel this for a second because you brought up an excellent point. When they got the monkey off their back and they won the game earlier in the year, and then they went to Denver the following week, I don't know how well publicized it was, but 21 of the Lions had the flu. And
that's right.
There was no DeAndre Swift and no TJ Hockenson. And as you just pointed out, he's out for the year. The Lions have won 2 of their last 3. Here's the question. You really don't know what kind of Lion team you're going to get on the road. Going to Atlanta, where if Atlanta brings their best and Lions bring their best, Atlanta should win that game. The question is, do they cover? But this is essentially a playoff game for Atlanta. They have to win this game if they want to stay alive in the playoff race. Meanwhile, it wouldn't be the worst things in the world if the Lions lost the game, because it would be good for their draft positioning. Be that as it may, they are playing hard under Dan Campbell. They love the guy. This is not an act. He's won them over. He's utterly sincere. He's authentic. And the reason I got so fired up against Arizona last week is I was told by one of my people inside the organization that there was a memo circulating that Arizona had put out that had their record 11-5, as if they'd already played the game, had already won the game. And the Lions saw that. And then there was an itinerary for the following week, because Arizona's got a big game this week, right? Christmas night at home against Indianapolis. In the memo, they were already looking ahead to that game as if they'd beaten the Lions, and they were looking ahead. The Lions got a hold of that. That really ticked them off, and they just clicked on all cylinders. Now, can they do that 2 weeks in a row? I don't know. So I think you're probably on the right side.
Oh, I love the look ahead. Sometimes it's easy to forget. And Bernie, I've noted, I'm in the Circa contest, and I have had some great runs. And then as you get to like Thanksgiving and the holidays, with all the ancillary stuff, you get off your game, right? You're not doing your same routine every day because you got family in town and you holiday stuff, and you're going to see Christmas lights. You're just not as sharp. I didn't even notice that last night. That's a great find. Are there any sandwich spots that you're aware of this week as I look at the schedule toward next week?
No, not this week, because this week what you're finding are a lot more divisional contests. You're finding a lot more games where there are truly almost de facto playoff games where you win or you're out. And that's what we're seeing, is that'll be kind of the recurring theme as we go down the board. You look at Cleveland and Green Bay. Look at tonight, San Francisco at Tennessee. We already mentioned, Indianapolis at Arizona. You get the Rams and the Vikings. That's a playoff game for the Vikings. Bills and Patriots. So you're seeing across the board, and the buys are over now. And I like your term, sandwich term, and obviously that does happen, but I don't think this is the week where that's happening.
Yeah, I guess maybe Chargers, which is
I'll get to Chargers in a sec.
They visit Houston, and then next week they have Denver, but they have that game at home, and it's not like Denver's that good. I forgot who won the first meeting, but I want to ask you about the Chargers. So I'm one of the few guys left in Survivor. 20 people left. Bernie, I don't have great options this week. I basically have the Falcons, the Chargers, and the Seahawks. And obviously with COVID, you want to hang around. I mean, heck, if some major quarterback is out, you got to pivot quickly. But where are you on the Chargers? Sounds like no Bosa for sure because he's not vaccinated. But Eckler added to the list. You're now down basically, if Herbert's your best player, Bosa's got to be second and Eckler third. Is there any trepidation going to Houston, which also has massive COVID issues? They've got 23 guys on the COVID list.
Yeah, I think the Chargers can name their score in this game.
Okay.
And they know that they could maybe afford one more loss, but they got a big game next week. They can't drop this game. Houston coming off a win as a franchise the last 3 years, they're 1-7 the following week coming off a win straight up and against the spread. You're going to be laying 11, so you've got about a 96% probability that the Chargers win that game. I have a lot of respect for Brandon Staley, but I think he has to learn that analytics are a guideline, not an inflexible anchor. And he always concerns me. I remember many, many years ago, listen, they went for it 5 times and made it twice. But the two that bothered me was on the opening drive. I remember many, many years ago, the Rams had a coach, Ray Malavasi, took him to the Super Bowl 1 year, got the kickoff, went down the field, 17 plays, 4th and 1, kicked a field goal. The media gave him a hard time. This is in the 80s. And he says, listen, I'll be damned if we're going to put together a good drive, 75 yards, take 6 minutes off the clock, and have nothing to show for it.
Nothing,
the first points of the game are the hardest. And I've always believed that in the NFL. I did 160 Lions pre- and post-game shows. The first points of the game are the hardest. Then when they could have made it a 2-score lead at the end and they elected not to do it, I don't know, man. You can't leave points on the board.
Yeah.
Houston is.
Where are you? You've been around the NFL for a while, Bernie. So this analytics debate's interesting. I said that, you know, some of these coaches are drunk on analytics now. They just want to kind of win the narrative. Point. Hey, they went for it. And then all the math guys break out their spreadsheets and say, look, they did the right thing. And it's like, you know, in the NBA now, you really want to just win the trade, Bernie. It's like, who cares if you got any players? Did you get pick swaps? You know, did you get 2027 first round pick? Like that matters. It doesn't mean anything. And I just, some of this stuff, Bernie, is killing me. I got to be honest. I'm 0-2 in these Harbaugh games where he's going for the win instead of playing to go to overtime and kick the extra point. I just, they've killed me. And I guess maybe that's colored my impact on it. But I just feel like they're hurting the team when you're taking away a chance to win. Now, I'm not playing the results. I'm just saying, like, why?
Well, I think there needs to be a far more nuanced discussion. I've always said I understand that analytics have a place. They told us what happened yesterday. And if you think they're going to tell us what's happening tomorrow, that's based on 1,000 simulations. So Baltimore might say, yeah, we had a 76% chance of making it here based on all our math crunching, but you didn't. Okay, great. You're telling me the operation was a great success, but the patient died. Hey, the light turned green, so I get to walk across the crosswalk, and I get run over by a bus. Yeah, but the light was green. Well, you got run over by a bus. What's the moral of the story? They've got to be a guideline, not an inflexible anchor. Bill Parcells said it best. Bill Parcells went for it on fourth down more than anybody back in the day. But he said, hey, I looked at my matchups, and if I looked across the line of scrimmage and Reggie White was there, I'm probably not going for it. If I don't think I can win that individual matchup. So there has to be a nuanced conversation. It can't be all or one, Jason. As John Madden once said, you can't go around life saying, never mind the horse is blind, just keep loading the cart. You've got to take it as it comes, and you are in the right, because we have the benefit of knowing that Harbaugh lost both those games. We'll never know what would have happened if he'd have gone overtime.
And what about this idea? You know, it's funny. I don't know if they did this for show, but the Ravens just happened to have Harbaugh mic'd up for that game against the Packers. And, of course, they score the touchdown, and he goes, what do you guys want to do? Do you want to go for it? Like he's coaching, you know, youth league, sixth grade basketball or something. What do you think the players are going to say? Nah, let's kick the extra point, play for over. Of course not. You know, what if he had asked Justin Tucker? What would Tucker have said? Oh, let's go for it. You don't need me. I'm one of the most reliable kickers in the history of the sport. I mean, Bernie, and I don't want to go on a tangent, but they had rolled that Packers defense all day.
Yes.
They punted once.
Yes.
They moved the ball up and down the field. Anyways.
So. And I thought that was a Herculean effort last week to come back down so many players and to get that close and have nothing to show for it. Now they get to go to Cincinnati with their backs against the wall.
Yeah.
Currently, Baltimore is the number 8 seed in the NFL. So in the playoffs. So they're on the outside looking in. They go to the Bengals as a short favorite. And they're a trendy play this week. But I can't back Baltimore this week. I'm not backing Cincinnati either. I'm being very selective. Yeah. So Harbaugh sort of
smart.
Now, I do know that he's 13-6, 67% against the number as a divisional road favorite in his career. So we'll see which real Baltimore and which real Cincinnati team shows up.
Yeah.
But they got waxed week 7 at home. You saw what happened there when they were 6.5-point favorite.
This is a tough one because I saw a stat that John Harbaugh, in same season rematches, meaning lost the first game, 8-0 against the spread.
I saw the same stat. I saw 9-0 actually.
Oh, okay. It's tiny sample size, right? It doesn't really mean much. But what happens when you've got 23 guys on IR? You know, and I don't know. Again, we're recording this Thursday. Lamar Jackson did not practice Wednesday. The line went up from 2.5 to 3. And guess what? Lamar Jackson, no show at practice again today. And now we're seeing Cincinnati 3 with juice headed toward 3.5. Tyler Huntley's been a great story.
Yes.
He is 3-0 against the spread. But again, more tapes out there on Huntley. He's not going to be able to help the secondary at all. They're going to get torched with all the backups they got. It just doesn't feel like a good matchup for me. I know you said you're passing, but I'm leaning Cincy here.
Fair enough. Gun to my head. They're home. Joe Burrow to me has been a huge X factor, and you bring up a good point about Tyler Huntley. Why? And by the way, why this guy was even invited to the NFL combine is beyond me, but he's proven he's got some junk in his trunk. He can play at the NFL level, but now they've got him on film and they're going to know his tendencies. And Cincinnati has proven to rise to the occasion every time this year when they needed to.
All right. Well, two more. Indianapolis visits to Arizona. Bernie, you know, the whole look ahead line thing. A lot of the rookie gamblers who are just listening and starting to gamble in the NFL, they don't know that there's a line put out the week prior all the time called a look-ahead line where you can see what it was. And guess what Arizona was last week? -5, favored by 5 against Indy. So now Arizona loses to Detroit, your Lions, and Indy takes down mighty New England in an island game Saturday night. And lo and behold, Indianapolis is now only a 1-point underdog, or pick 'em. 5 points is a big swing. I kind of love Arizona here. Crazy?
Yeah. It's well, no, you've got, Jason, this is why you're good at this. You're a contrarian. Let's just unpack some facts about the game. First of all, there's a little bit of concern for me in that the Cardinals just allowed Craig Reynolds out of Kutztown State, formerly the pride of Andre Reed in Buffalo, 112 yards last week. Now they have to deal with the prowess of Jonathan Taylor. That's a little concerning to me. The reason Arizona's scuffling in their last 7 games, or 3-4 straight up against the spread in their last 7, and they're having a hard time, is they forgot how to score in the red zone. The first 8 weeks of the season, they were 70% scoring in the red zone. Number one, they need that back. I don't know why Kyler Murray forgot to prosecute an offense that could score in the red zone. They've got to, and all the pressure in the world is at on Arizona, but they are at home. And so in a situation of this nature, on a standalone game on Christmas night, I think Arizona knows what they need to do. And they do miss TJ Watt or JJ Watt immensely.
Yeah.
I really believe that. But you've got to be the contrarian, which I think you are, and I'm with you. I would lean Arizona. You've got to throw the master of the obvious out the window and believe this team and Cliff Kingsbury does have enough in their DNA to get this W.
Yeah, I like the Colts, but again, let's remember, you're backing Carson Wentz, who is, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, he's just doing enough. I'm not buying it. I'm not a huge fan of his work.
He's not.
And
he's
yeah, if Kyler Murray wakes up and starts running again, like you alluded to, I mean, I don't know, is he still hurt? That can't be the case. Last year, he averaged over 6 yards a carry. This year, it's like 3.8. And if you look at Lamar Jackson, you remember that Monday night game against his Colts defense? You know, like 400 yards passing, like 70 yards rushing. I think it was 500 yards total offense, and just killed him. Like, Kyler Murray, just run around, be that video game guy, and you should be able to roll this team, right?
I'll tell you what, here's another thing, and I give you top credit. This is a sharp angle on your part. So you've got the Cardinals at what number did you get them at?
Pick 'em is the best, but it looks like they're favored by 1 right now.
Right, I see 1.5 some shops. Here's the point. The look ahead line was 5. I'm glad you brought that up. Every Wednesday here in Las Vegas, there are 2 shops, the Westgate and the Circa. They put up the look-ahead line. So, for instance, there are already Week 17 lines out there, and that can affect totals, that can affect lines. And sharp guys, if they know where the direction's going to go, they grab the line. So you got a good price. You got yourself an excellent price. Here's why it's doubly excellent. You're buying a good team low and selling against a not-as-good team, frankly, high. And I didn't research it, but you could actually go back and see what the line would have been back in July in the original send-off line. Bet you it was much more favorable towards Arizona being a favorite. My point is, you not only have a good number here, this is a team, Arizona, that's probably better than Indianapolis at home. You're getting them low. You're buying a good team low and selling against a not as good team high. If I could stumble that out, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Buy low, sell high. Perfect. Yeah. Great business principle. So Bernie, I wanted to maybe do Chiefs, but they've got a lot of COVID issues. The Saints obviously are down to Ian Book, former Notre Dame quarterback. I don't know if he's throwing a pass in the NFL.
Miami, they feasted. You know, they're 6-0 against the number, their last 6. They face Tyrod Taylor, Joe Flacco, Cam Newton, Mike Glenn, and Zach Wilson. And you just said it. This week they get Ian Book.
But I think this one, yeah, they're on the road. I haven't seen the New Orleans defense COVID list because I do think Lattimore, if you can put him on Waddle, this offense is really limited. You know you can't run. Duke Johnson's not running for 100 yards against the Saints. So I don't know. I think that's going to be closer. I'm not totally afraid of taking the Saints there. But is there a game you love that you're all over, be it the Cowboys as double-digit favorites, Seattle against Chicago? But it sounds like Justin Fields is hurt. I don't know if he's going to go. The NFL, a lot of injuries. So the intrigue is everywhere. Any game you love?
Yeah, the one game I got to hold my nose a little, but I grabbed Pittsburgh +10. And only because the way they have just continually battled this year, all of a sudden, because the Chiefs have looked so good in their last 6 and they're 24-3 in the last 8 games of the season the last 4 years, so they're playing their best for last. 10 points is just too many in this game. The Steelers are playing for their life. It's all about motivation. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. I could see that line being 6.5, 7, but you make that double digits, and I'm a player on Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's a good number grab, because Kelce and Hill are on the COVID list. If one is back, there's no way it's close to 10. If both are down, this is what, a field goal, Bernie? Maybe less?
It could, absolutely. Those two guys can move a line a lot. I'd like to ask your opinion on the game, Jason. In all seriousness, the Rams are laying 3 at Minnesota. And the Vikings, well, without going through all the analysis, I'm not a fan of Matt Stafford ever laying points on the road. And I think he's over. That's a conversation for a different day. But this is a Vikings team that, and Dalvin Cook is now on the COVID list. It seems like they're being overlooked here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I do this gambling show for Fox, and in my notes on this game, Vikings play up to their competition. They beat the Ravens, they beat the Chargers, they beat the Packers. Don't tell me about what it was like against the Lions, because right. For whatever reason, Lions, Bears, Zimmer doesn't care. He just 3 yards in a cloud of dust. His team's not up for it. He's almost like a Mike Tomlin, if you will, where Mike Tomlin, hey, put them in an underdog spot, and Pittsburgh is feisty as hell. I mean, Zimmer is an underdog, 5-2 this season. I do wonder, Dalvin Cook out, is Thielen a go? Have you seen anything on that?
I just heard that he was in COVID protocol today, but it is only Thursday. Maybe if he has a couple of negative tests or something. But the Vikings can beat the Rams with either one. They've been their own worst enemy. Missed field goals, you know, turnovers, inopportune times. Typically, an NFL game comes down to 5 crucial plays, and the Vikings seem to be on the wrong side of those. One final game. I did fire on this. I did grab the New York Giants +10 against the Eagles.
Wow.
Now, here's what's interesting is the Giants have been pretty good as a road dog the last 5 years. You talk about a home field disadvantage. Just blew me away last week. Do you know, Jason, since 2017, at home, the Giants have played 31 home games, won only 10 outright. They're 10-21 straight against up. In 31 home games, and that's a home field disadvantage. 9-22, and they even had free medium soda Sunday last week.
Oh, I saw that.
not large soda, not extra large, free medium soda. And the best I can tell, they're undefeated the week following free medium soda Saturday. So it was
Of course.
No, but that's a lot of points in a divisional game this late in the year. And I'm looking at the value. It's a short week. Remember, the Eagles had to play a Tuesday night game. And the Eagles are very erratic, so I think that game's actually closer than people realize.
Interesting. Jake Fromm, I think, making his first start, right? Because Glennon is just abysmal. You can't start him. But interesting that Sirianni got COVID, right? So what we've seen the last couple weeks is, listen, if a head coach gets it, who's he been around a lot? Well, his assistant coaches usually get it. Sometimes his quarterbacks get it. So if Hurts gets it, you're looking at Gardner Minshew. I don't think that's a big drop-off.
No.
But there's a chance both of them get it. So this is one of those. I mean, I like your idea of grabbing 10. I think I'm going to probably go there now and just grab a little taste of 10. But I want quickly to go back to Vikings-Rams. I asked about Thielen because, like, if you put Ramsey to follow around Justin Jefferson, I don't think he'll shut him down, but he can slow him. Then, and Dalvin Cook is out, then it's what, the Alex Madison, Tyler Conklin show? And I just don't trust that Vikings line. Like Aaron Donald up the middle, just nightmares for Kirk Cousins. I can see that unraveling. What did you think of Cam Akers, by the way? Coming off injured reserve, didn't he tear an ACL in like August?
Yeah, I thought he was out for the year in August. That's why they got Sony Michel. So I'm a little baffled by that. Look, it's going to come down to the Rams stopping the run, and they're not great against the run. And I hate to be cliche, but it'll probably come down to turnovers. And the Rams have a pretty tough duty. They're still fighting to get that number one seed. Mathematically, they're still alive, right? Or not in to win their division. But after this, they got to go to Baltimore, and they got to finish up against San Francisco, Sean McVay's number. So the Rams got 3 tough weeks, and I could easily see them going into Minnesota this week and screwing the pooch.
Would not shock me either. All right, Bernie Fratto, his book, The View from the Cheap Seats, is out. Get it hard copy. Bernie's got a great storyteller. Bernie, thanks for taking the time. Happy holidays to you and yours, man.
As always, thanks for having me, Jason. Keep up the great work. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Great stuff from Bernie Frotto here on Straight Fire. I always like Bernie Frotto. Good information. Big time information guy when it comes to the NFL and football and gambling. Good stuff. Hope you guys pick up his book. All right, let's get to a couple NFL best bets for this weekend. Before I do NFL, I do want to say something. This is a little crazy, but I just want to put it on your radar. And I know we're not doing a lot on bowl season. By the way, another bowl was just canceled. Hawaii has to bail out of its bowl. COVID, you know, bowl season's brutal this year. I don't know if I've watched 5 bowl plays yet. Doesn't mean I haven't gambled on the games. At any rate, SEC now 0-2 in bowl games. Missouri lost to Army. Missouri's best player ended up not playing, and so Army ended up being favored by a touchdown, but they won anyway. Army beating an SEC team. Come on. Okay? And then last night, UCF, a touchdown underdog, rallies to whoop Florida 29-17. Kind of a beatdown. Kind of embarrassing. And these aren't like major programs they're losing to. The SEC's now gone down to UCF and Army. Just let that sink in. I know motivation matters and coaching changes and all that fun stuff. I get that. But from a sheer talent perspective, the SEC probably in both those games had at least 15 of the 20 best players on the field. Maybe 20 of the best 25. I don't. It's got to be somewhere close to that. And the SEC lost both of them. I did something, not that crazy, and it's not a ton of money, but I went and bet Cincinnati money line against Alabama. I'm not saying the SEC stinks, but the SEC has not played well in bowl season. Okay, this is not some sweeping indictment of the SEC. I personally don't think Cincinnati will win. We touched on it with Bernie. It's easy to talk yourself into fading Alabama in the playoff because you've had a month and you're rooting against Alabama and it's Saban and... I would love for Cincinnati to win, obviously. I do have a little bit of money now invested in Cincinnati money line just in case. It will make it for fun, and obviously we'll preview the game in much greater depth next week. Let's see what happens with the line. But all right, let's get to the NFL lines. And this is another really tough week, and obviously the Niners lost to start the week. Don't feel good about that. Felt like it's a right diagnosis. You just can't really handicap Jimmy G turnovers. I mean, it's bad. You know, those interceptions were brutal. Also brutal is the COVID situation. The New Orleans Saints quarterback room decimated. They are down to Ian Book, I think rookie out of Notre Dame, who will be starting, rookie or second year guy. So now Miami's favored on the road. I'm not touching that game. In the contest, I might be forced to take Dallas. I know it's not going to be something I really want to do, but there's not a lot on the board. Like, what do you do with Denver? I can't back Drew Locke. But at the same time, I can't back the Raiders when they don't have Darren Waller. I mean, did you see how bad they looked against a half of a Browns team that was practice squad guys? Like, Nick Mullins nearly beat them. And Denver's got a much better defense. So I can't touch that game. Kansas City and Pittsburgh, way too much COVID. Who knows who's going to play in that one? And you got to get the picks in by Saturday around noon Pacific. And so there's not going to be no clarity. I want to take the Patriots, but I know what's going to happen. Remember last time I took Bills against the Patriots, Patriots win, and I'm going to take the Patriots this time and the Bills will win. I can already see that happening. Jets, Jags, no thanks. Jets have a million guys on the COVID list. Games come down to pick, but Jacksonville, no thanks. I really want to take the Rams, but it feels like every square gambler on planet Earth is on the Rams, and you could just see it. You open social media, and it's like, oh, Rams are going to kill him. No Dalvin Cook. I mean, they were fine with Madison, and the Lions are one of those. I'm sorry, the Vikings are one of those teams that play down to their opponents. So when they face the Lions and the Bears, they don't look good. And then when they have to step up in class against, say, the Packers or the Chargers, they look good. So. Vikings probably going to scare me off there. I really want to take Cincinnati, but that's another one. Like, do you really want to go against some of these Harbaugh trends we talked about in the Bernie Frotto thing? Like, it's tough. Atlanta's a team I really want to take, but unfortunately, if the Lions COVID report comes up good and Jared Goff is back and a bunch of their other guys are back and Swift actually plays, which is a stunner. He was supposed to be shut down for the season and they're like, I practiced twice this week. What? So that line's coming down. And I mean, come on, you lay in a lot of points with Matty Ice and the Falcons anywhere? Let's see what's going on with the Chargers, the Giants. This is a really tough weekend. The only games I really like, Arizona is one that I definitely like. You guys know how the market works. Buy low, sell high. Selling high on Indy, buying low on Arizona, rock bottom on Arizona, bargain basement price. Nobody wants to touch the Cardinals this week. They stink. They can't stop the run. Cliff Kingsbury, all the narratives are true. It's like, come on. You kidding me? This is not that bad of a team. And they get their center back. And if you watched the game last week against the Lions, it was brutal. I mean, their line was getting caved in. Colts secondary is kind of beat up. I think there's a big Zach Ertz game. I'm on the Cardinals. I already bet it. That's one game that I definitely like. I know, listen, and not a lot of people are going to like that. That's fine. I guess if I'm forced, and again, it's Friday, there's COVID issues. If I'm forced to make a pick, I probably would lean Bengals ultimately. I can't touch Green Bay at 7.5. This is a great teaser weekend. If you want to tease Green Bay down, and I'll say this, Cleveland, the recipe's there. Run the football, keep Aaron Rodgers on the sideline, right? And then you're like, okay, well, guess what? If Green Bay like makes adjustment and stops the run, well, if you don't have Myles Garrett, groin injury, hadn't practiced this week, two cornerbacks are out, Newsom and I think Johnson are both out. And it's like, well, what? Like, you don't have a pass rush and your secondary's hurt? Oh, okay, good luck. Green Bay will be in every teaser I have. I think Tampa, I know it's not going to be popular, but I'm going to wait for that, hopefully to get to 9.5, and I'll tease them in every game, every wager that I have. I want to tease the Eagles. I don't know, coming off the Tuesday night game, and as we talked about with Bernie, some concern over COVID. Let's wait that one out. I'm definitely teasing the Chargers down. If you're into teasing up Minnesota up to double digits, remember they play every single game close. Cousins coming in the back door down 17. I totally see that. Rams don't really blow out good teams. They blow out bad teams. But this is a tough week, and there's no need to fire on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. You can wait till Sunday. I know that sometimes people don't like to bet on game day, but... And that's because, you know, the market, the lines have already moved significantly. The big money players have their $200,000 bets down. But I think this is a good weekend to wait. And teasers are your friend. All right, guys. Have a great Christmas. I'll be hosting Dan Patrick's show again on Monday. Yes, again. And we'll have a podcast Monday as well. And I'll talk to you then.